Siobhan Chapman here, and I am pleased to welcome our UBS Asset Management Monthly Macro Podcast. Each month, we hear from the top investment professionals from UBS Asset Management's multi-asset team. Today, I am pleased to introduce our speakers, Evan Brown, Portfolio Manager and Head of Multi-Asset Strategy, and Fatou Conte, Multi-Asset Investment Specialist. Fatou, with that brief introduction, I'll pass it over to you.
Thanks, Siobhan. I'm excited to be here today, and we've got a great discussion lined up. Our goal today will be to share our thoughts on the market implications of yesterday's election, our latest macro views, as well as how we're positioning the MAPS portfolio. So, Evan, let's get straight to the topic of the day. Trump has won the presidential election. The Republicans have taken back the Senate, and at this point, it's likely that they'll win the House, meaning a red sweep is the most likely outcome. So what are the implications for the economy?
Thanks, Fatou. And yes, it's been an eventful several hours, but great to be with everyone to give our take on what's happening and steps forward. So the effect on the economy, there's a lot of moving parts when it comes to, the Trump and a red sweep. If it was Kamala Harris, it would have just simply been the status quo. But with Trump, you get a number of changes. So, you can put it into good Trump and bad Trump, good Trump for the economy and bad Trump for the economy. Good Trump for the economy is that there's a lighter regulatory touch, right? And a general pro-business stance that can revive animal spirits. And so that is a plus. Another plus would be, full extension of the personal tax cuts, along with the potential for, if it is indeed a red sweep, for additional cuts to the corporate tax rate. And so these are positives. These are our tailwinds. The bad Trump is, has to do with tariffs and potential for very draconian steps on immigration. I'm purely talking about economics here. If tariffs are broadly used as bargaining chips in order to negotiate better trading deals with other countries, there's this step up in tariffs as opposed to what President Trump has proposed, which is across the board tariffs on all countries, then we'd be okay. But the more severe that Trump is on the tariff front, ultimately the tariffs are a boost to the price level and a tax on consumers who have to pay more for goods, and ultimately that means they can spend less on other consumption. So that's any kind of marginal steps on tariffs, that's fine. The economy can take that. But if we're talking across the board tariffs, then that's a negative. And to be honest, we don't know for sure exactly what Trump is going to do. So there is a risk there. The other risk is on immigration. Now, immigration was going to fall under a Harris administration, already falling under Biden administration, but is set to fall more precipitously under Trump. It's one of his priorities, and immigration has been, in a purely economic sense, helpful in us getting a soft landing, and that we've seen an influx in labor at a time when we had very tight labor markets, right? And so that helps bring wages down, which helped to bring inflation down, which ultimately helped to get the Fed easing, and it boosted potential growth of the economy. As long as we still have positive labor force growth, then that's okay. And our expectation is that there will certainly be a slowdown in immigration, but not something too disruptive. But if we are talking about massive deportations or moving to net negative immigration and a net negative labor force growth, then that would prove quite disruptive. And like the tariffs, it's kind of a stagflationary shock. It's bad for growth and it would boost inflation via a tighter labor market and higher wages. So, you know, at this point, our bias is that on net for the U.S. economy, Trump is going to be a positive, particularly because the economy is so important. You know, he ran on a better economy, and so he will be sensitive to some of the downside effects of some of his other policies and take a more nuanced approach. But let's acknowledge the risk that if taken too far on tariffs and immigration, there are some downside risks there.
Great. And Evan, as you mentioned, there's still a lot of uncertainty, the House being won. But that being said, what does this election result likely mean for the markets?
So view on the markets is essentially what you're seeing today, which is you're seeing a surge in U.S. equities, outperformance of U.S. equities versus the rest of the world, which makes sense because of the tariff concerns. You're seeing a bond sell-off a decent amount. Now, bonds, this is where it depends a lot on whether it's a red sweep or not, because Trump would be more constrained if the Democrats keep the House, which looks, as you said, Fatu, unlikely at this stage. But if they do keep the House, then Trump might be more limited fiscally, might not get a full extension of his tax cuts and such. And so duration and bonds could rally a bit in that outcome. But in all likelihood, there's a red sweep and there's going to be some net fiscal expansion. In the scenarios that we ran, looking at the different possibilities, combinations of president and Congress, a red sweep was the most fiscally expansive. So moving from the 6% of GDP deficits that we're at now to 7% plus. These are not huge moves, but they do justify, you know, higher yields. And then also, along with the regional outperformance, within equities, you know, what we're seeing today, financials, that's where you see the big deregulatory push, so a big gain there. And really just seeing kind of a broadening out of the equity rally on the views that, you know, on net, who Trump is going to be positive for the U.S. economy. So that's there. And then the dollar as well, rising on this relative U.S. outperformance versus the rest of the world. So I think, the election result is what you're seeing right now. We broadly expect to continue into year end. And I guess we'll get into positioning in a bit, but we're broadly positioned that way as well.
So justifiably, I mean, there's a lot of attention being paid right now to the elections, but there's also plenty happening on the macro side of things. So what are your latest thoughts on where we stand today on growth and inflation? And what do you expect for the Fed meeting tomorrow?
Yeah, so on growth and inflation, it's been a good story. I mean, we had 2.8% real GDP, that's very healthy for the third quarter, and 2.2% on the quarter core inflation. I mean, that is Goldilocks. That is strong growth and low inflation. That's over the quarter, and we did see in the last month inflation come in a little bit stickier. So we can't say that the job is finished on inflation on a year-over-year basis. We're not quite at 2%. We are above the Fed's target, but we are still seeing remarkably resilient growth, defying vast majority of people's expectations as incomes continue to grow and the consumer powers through. The Fed tomorrow, we expect to cut rates once again. They moved 50 basis points last month, in September from 5.25 to 4.75 to 5%. We expect a 25 basis point move, so to 4.5 to 4.75%. That's the window in which the Fed funds rate trades in. And then we expect guidance to be that to suggest, you know, data dependence from Powell, but generally him saying that he sees enough progress such that they'll be able to continue cutting rates. Now, the question is how much are they able to cut rates? And our thinking is that given that growth remains quite robust and inflation isn't quite there on target, they're going to be a little bit more limited in cutting rates as much as they have forecasted. And so, you know, we still think they cut twice this year. So, you know, tomorrow and in December, 25 basis points each. But we're getting to a stage where they might not be able to deliver the full four cuts that are priced into next year. And so we think they'll take a pause, in January and then probably cut in March and then see where the economy is and what policies are coming out of the Trump administration and go from there. But overall, given the health of the economy, you know, even if the Fed is not cutting rates as aggressively as people thought, a few months ago, it's still, you know, we'd much rather that than the other way around, right? We'd much rather have fewer rate cuts because the economy is fine than have a lot of rate cuts because the economy is not fine. We definitely feel like we're in the former, and that's reflected in asset prices.
Well, speaking of rate cuts, because we've seen long-term yields rise even after the Fed's 50 basis point cut in September, there's been a lot of attention given to the U.S. budget deficit. So what is the concern there, and what's your opinion on this issue?
Yeah, so I think we all know, every person listening to this call is very well aware that the U.S. debt is unsustainable and that it's not appropriate to be running 6% of GDP deficits when you're in an economic expansion. And like I said, I mean, I think what the Trump plan suggests is a further expansion of the deficit. And so, but of course, these things can change, and he's surrounding himself with some advisors who are talking about bringing down the deficit to 3%, right? And so, so we shall see. But base case is a further widening in the deficit, and certainly a continued rise in U.S. debt. And at some point, there is going to be a reckoning. And the reality is, I can't tell you when that reckoning is going to be. What I can say is that, I as much as I can't time it and say when it's going to matter, or a certain level of debt to GDP is the breaking point, what I can do is watch the markets and the correlations in the markets. And what we see now is when bond yields go up, the dollar is going up with bond yields. So there's a positive correlation between yields and the dollar, meaning that as interest rates go higher, right, people around the world want to buy dollars and they want to buy U.S. debt. And so as long as that's the case, we're okay. If we start recognizing that yields are going up and the dollar started to go down, if we see a real break in that correlation, then that's when we start getting more concerned, and that's where in our multi-asset portfolios we would have to be getting a little bit more defensive and thoughtful about how we're allocating tactically across assets.
Great. So far we've discussed the elections, the macro picture, and a bit about the budget deficit. So let's pivot a bit to talk about positioning. You're currently overweight equities versus bond. Can you talk about your outlook on equities for the remainder of the year?
Yeah, so, you know, we were overweight equities on bonds, not because we're expecting a Trump win or anything like that. You know, our view was that whatever the outcome of this election, because the economy is in good shape, because earnings are growing healthily, because inflation is coming down enough such that the Fed is easing, and then because with it, what is usually the case in elections is that you have this, you know, kind of period of a wobble going into the election, as there's uncertainty, and then once you get the clarity, regardless of who the candidate is, once you get the clarity, then there's the passing of the risk event, there's more certainty, and equities tend to rally into year end. That's been the case under Democrat wins, Republican wins, passing of the risk event, and then there's a normal seasonal rally in stocks. And that was our view. Not to say that there wouldn't have been, you know, different price action today if Harris had won. There's a little bit more Trump excitement, that's for sure. And we certainly see it in particular areas like financials and small caps. But our general view was that equities would move in a positive direction regardless of who is president. And that remains our view into year end. We have an overweight for the in the US versus the rest of the world. We had paired a trade, a long EM versus developed markets ex-US trade in our portfolios with the idea that there's some asymmetry there, that if Harris won, EM could move higher on the reduction in tariff risk, and also just focusing on China's really starting to engage in fiscal policy to support their economy. We've also seen better earnings trends in emerging markets than in Europe, for example. But this trade could also potentially work in a Trump win, in that we thought that tariff risk might be underpriced in Europe and well priced in already in China. And actually, in fact, what we're seeing today is that emerging markets so far are outperforming that developed market ex China index. So that relative value trade is playing out too. So that's where we're at right now, and still quite constructive going into year end, and we'll start next year with the Trump administration and see how the policies come out, and see if some of the things that we're concerned about, you know, the quote unquote bad Trump that I mentioned earlier, impact on the economy, we'll have to evaluate when we see those policies. But into year end, we think what we're seeing today can continue.
So it sounds like this is a great environment for equities. Moving over to fixed income, how are you positioned within that space?
Yeah, so broadly in fixed income, we're underweight, but have managed our duration to be fairly neutral at this point, because we do think some value is really opening up in bonds. And 10-year yield, as I speak, is 4.4%. Certainly, it has the potential to go higher on fiscal related, both the tailwinds from fiscal policy support on growth, but also the kind of concerns on fiscal deficits and the like. But in general, given that the Fed remains restrictive, we still expect them to be easing. We still expect inflation to be coming down over time. There's been a lot of easing priced out of the rates curve. That duration is offering some value here, so we don't want to be too underweight in fixed income here. Where we do have a preference right now, we have a tactical trade on the Bloomberg Ag Index, which gives us exposure both to investment grade debt and to securitized debt. We have seen some spread widening in assets like mortgage-backed securities, and we think they're actually quite good value here. And so that is, we want to make sure we get that securitized exposure into the MAPS portfolios. So we have that in there.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Evan. This has been really a great discussion. And given it's an election week, I'm sure you're really busy with a lot of movement happening in the market. So I'll let you get back to doing what you do best, which is delivering alpha for our clients.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.